Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC, made on Varick Street.
Full moon and empty arms. The moon is there for us to share, but where are you?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Bob Dylan recently surprised fans by posting a brand new song to his website. It's a cover of the 1945 Frank Sinatra hit Full Moon and Empty Arms. It's reported to be the first track from an upcoming album from the 72-year-old singer, whose last release, Tempest, came out in 2012. But for a select group of fans, the so-called Dylanologists, this is just another chapter to explore in an entire lifetime worthy of study, preservation, and, let's face it, obsession. Joining me here in the studio is David Kinney, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist whose new book is called The Dylanologists. David, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Let's define our terms here. On the spectrum from fan to absolute wacko obsessive, who are the Dylanologists? Where do they exist?
I mean, I take a broad look at that term. I mean, I'll say that it's anybody who would be considered sort of a Dylan expert by regular people out in the real world. Now, that probably includes more people than would admit to being called Dylanologists. I mean, the trouble with the term is that it was invented by A.J. Weberman, and A.J. Weberman has come to be reviled in this community for his analysis of Dylan songs, not just necessarily for going through his garbage in the 60s, but for, you know, coming up with these outlandish theories that Dylan is a closet racist and Holocaust denier and all that stuff.
So this is the guy, A.J. Weberman, this is the guy that Dylan actually punches and then, you know, takes his Dylan Liberation Front pin off and then...
So A.J. says.
So A.J. says. Well, it's in your book too, so. Now, a very telling thing that you've already said is the phrase, in the real world. Do the Dylanologists exist in some other world?
There's definitely a Dylan universe. I mean, the subtitle of the book is Adventures in the Land of Bob. And you know, there is this kind of side universe where he seems to dominate like a skyscraper or something. I mean, he's got a record out or a compilation out or a book out, or there's something sort of going on at any moment. And I think that the Dylan crowd just sort of feeds on that, feeds on his ubiquitousness. Even though he's this very private person, he seems to be everywhere.
Why Dylan, though? I mean, there are plenty of other mammoth figures out there. You know, Michael Jackson was certainly a huge, iconic figure in 20th century American pop culture. Why Dylan?
It's difficult to like not be snobbish, you know, when you talk about this sort of thing. I mean,
are you a Dylanologist, David Kinney?
I think I've become a Dylanologist by spending 3 years looking at this whole thing. You know, I think that Dylan is different from, say, being a Major League Baseball fan. So there's some surface parallels, right? You can go to a bunch of games a year. You can follow the box score. Dylan fans sort of follow the set list, follow his tour. He does 100 shows a year. So there is some parallels there. I mean, I think that the thing that makes Dylan interesting and has made it sort of a lifelong thing for many people is that he's been doing different stuff over 50 years. He doesn't sort of sit still and keep producing the same records. And there is that aura of mystique and myth that he's cloaked himself in. I mean, he's kept his private life private. He's kept the questions about what the songs mean, as if that means anything. He's not talked about that, and he's left it up to his listeners to sort of fill that void, which is the way it should be. And his work just sort of rewards deep dives into it. I mean, you can listen to songs at different points in your life, and they'll do different things. You'll have different reactions to them, sort of like a great novel.
So, you know, you point out several times in the book, you know, that Dylan has said in this or that interview that there's nothing to explain, that, you know, if he had to explain these songs, he wouldn't be able to. They're just, those were the songs. That's how they came out. And you know, it's up to someone else to figure out what it means to them.
Right. He said, go ask my audience if you want to know. Nobody, you know, the media was always asking me, what does it mean? And they never went to the audience and said, what do you think it means? And I think that's valid.
So in terms of, I don't want to give the impression that these people are all nuts and cranks in your book. They are obsessive, but some of them have made real contributions to musicology, right?
Sure. You know, somebody like Scott Wormuth is a great example. So this is a disc jockey in Albuquerque who, when he was growing up, his dad worked in a pressing plant. And so he brought home records, and Scott listened to everything that you could think of. And he didn't just listen to it. He was one of those kids who would go to the library and try and figure out the history behind the music. And so that led him into a career as a disc jockey, and he's just a guy who has this encyclopedic knowledge of music. So fast forward to 2001, and Dylan releases Love and Theft, which is a record that's filled with quotation. It's filled with allusions, playfully.
As the title indicates.
As the title would suggest. The title itself is a quotation. And, you know, Scott sort of joined this crowd that was trying to figure out what came from where. Eventually, that grew into this project of looking at Dylan's memoir, Chronicles, which he has shown includes phrases from all over the place, mm-hmm. from Hemingway, from Jack London, from Time Magazine, from a Joe Esterhaus book. I mean, it's all over the map.
So the record you're talking about, Love and Theft, which came out in 2001, there's this song called Summer Days. And he's alluding to, quoting from, The Great Gatsby here.
Well, and it's sort of a classic quote. I mean, it's sort of a neatly nested in-joke. You know, he says, the line is, you can't repeat the past. You know, what do you mean you can? Of course you can. And so it's a quote, but it's also, you know, commenting on what he's doing. And so it's just, I think it's fabulous.
This is from Bob Dylan's record, Love and Theft, the song Summer Days.
Looking into my eyes, she's a hole in my head. She looked into my eyes, she's holding my hand. She said, you can't repeat the past. I say, you can't. What do you mean you can't? Of course you can. Where do you come from? Where do you go? Sorry, that's nothing you would need to know. Well, my back is bent to the wall so long, it seemed like it's stuck. Why don't you break my heart one more time, just for good luck?
A little bit of Summer Days from Bob Dylan with a little assist from F. Scott Fitzgerald there. From the album called Love and Theft, it is a knowing, a winking title from Bob Dylan from 2001. Because as David Kinney has told us, the songs are full of allusions and quotations and outright liftings from other things. David Kinney's book is called The Dylanologists. It is out now. It's subtitled Adventures in the Land of Bob. Let me come back to something else that goes to something we were talking about earlier, the fact that some of these obsessives have made major contributions. Bootlegging. Now, I know there's a whole branch of the music industry that does not view that as any kind of contribution, but let's face it, you know, bootlegs have brought to our attention lots of, you know, recordings that we otherwise never would have heard, and it really begins with the Dylanologists, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was a number of guys in the early 60s who were searching for these things and trying to get them in the best possible sound quality and save it for history. I mean, they viewed Dylan as an important figure. One of the early guys was a New Yorker who was into jazz, and there was a whole sort of bootlegging culture in jazz that he already knew about, and so he sort of transplanted that onto Dylan. And, you know, these early guys, AJ was one of them, were finding these tapes and sharing them with people. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, you know, very much of that age of trying to, you know, make the music free. Now, once it became a business, once Great White Wonder comes out and these guys are selling actual bootleg records as opposed to just trading tapes for free or for a couple of dollars or whatever, that's when it changes.
Right. That's when it crosses a line. I mean, this whole thing has so much in the way of kind of predicting big, thorny issues that would face the music world in
sure.
the digital age. But we're talking about the 1960s. And what is the importance of the Great White Wonder?
Well, you know, it was the first. You know, one of the guys in the book is a guy by the name of Mitch Blank, who remembers standing in line for a concert and some guy, you know, walking around with a bag filled with these things. And he's like, what? This exists? And so it was just this eye-opening thing that, oh, you know, there's music behind the music, and we can get it. And so for him and others like him, I mean, it continues to this day. There's stuff that that doesn't circulate. There's stuff that people have in their attics that they don't want to let go of. And so that hunt continues. And, you know, there's amazing stuff that's still out there, which is kind of for people who love Dylan and have heard virtually everything. That's just sort of this hopeful thing that there's something out there that I haven't heard before.
Right. Well, you know, there's probably a lot of people who have not heard The Great White Wonder. It is not stellar sound quality at all, but this is Dylan, and it sounds like the band.
I believe so, yeah.
Running through some demo tapes, including this version of a song called Too Much of Nothing.
Too much of nothing can make a man abuse the king. He can walk the streets and boast like most, but he won't know a thing. Now it's all been done before, it's all been written in the book. But when there's too much of nothing, nobody should look. Say hello to Mallory, say hello to
from the 1968-69 bootleg album called The Great White Wonder, Bob Dylan with Too Much of Nothing. And bootlegging certainly becomes a big part of Dylanology. David Kinney with me on Soundcheck, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of the new book, The Dylanologists, as well as The Big One, An Island, An Obsession, and The Furious Pursuit of a Great Fish. The Dylanologists is out now. And in terms of, you know, the never-ending tour, it's almost like The Grateful Dead. You know, people tape every show, they're swapping tapes, but, you know, the line is crossed when we have The Great White Wonder, when people start selling the stuff.
I guess so. You know, there are bands who welcome it, and there are bands who don't. I mean, Dylan is one that doesn't. But you know, a band like the Grateful Dead, their fan base thrived on it, and they saw it as generating sales on the other side. And I'm sure that's true. I mean, the people who buy bootlegs are not buying Dylan records.
Right.
They're buying everything that he's putting out.
They're the completists.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, not that they're all completists, but they surely have all the official catalog.
Right.
You know, they're not replacing they're not going to not buy Highway 61 because they want to get the latest concert version of it.
So you mention at one point, actually at a couple of points in the book, that of all people, Bob Dylan should understand the obsessive nature of Bob Dylan fans, because you have him showing up at John Lennon's house and like kissing the spot on the ground where Elvis stood when he made one of his recordings. And he was basically a Woody Guthrie, almost stalker type when he first came to New York.
He did befriend him early on, yeah. Yeah, and think about in Chronicles and in the Sirius XM radio show that he did, 100 episodes of Other People's Music, and in interviews, he's talked about his heroes, and he's used some of the same language. He talks about meeting Johnny Ray in an elevator, and he's like, what do you say to the guy? Which is just classic. So, yeah, there's an element that he gets it. I mean, he's a music nut, and mm-hmm. anybody who has met him and wanted to have a conversation with him has approached it as, you know, let's talk about music, and that's the successful way, as opposed to, hey, let's talk about your music.
Yeah. Now, you know, even early on, an early song like Blowin' in the Wind, I mean, this grows out of that obsessive love of Woody Guthrie, at least in part, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's soaking up influences from everywhere, and he's still doing that. And that's been the story from the beginning. I mean, this is a guy who has listened to obscure music his entire life. I mean, if you look at Highway 61, you find references from old blues records that mm-hmm. were, you know, obscure pre-war records. And he's sliding in melodies, and he's sliding in things that Maybe he figured nobody would notice, or maybe he figured everybody already knew, and that was the way it worked, because that's the way he started in the village.
So a title like Love and Theft, although it applies to a 2001 record, could conceivably apply to his whole career.
Well, I mean, I think it made explicit what was already true about him. I mean, you could look at a minor record like Empire Burlesque, and he's taking from old films.
Well, I thought that the rain would cool things down, but it looks like it don't. I'd like to get you to change your mind, but it looks like you won't. From now on I'll be busy, ain't going nowhere fast. I'm just glad it's over, and I'm seeing the real you at last.
David Kinney's book is called The Dylanologists. It is out now. It's subtitled Adventures in the Land of Bob. What does Dylan think about the Dylanologists?
Not much. You know, I think part of it probably grows out of when he arrived on the scene, you know, and it was a weird decade and he was an eccentric guy and he drew a bunch of eccentrics, not the least, you know, A.J. Weberman, the guy who went through his trash. You know, I think over the years he's been frustrated by, you know, people trying to read into the music what's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's also been beset, like a lot of celebrities, by, you know, stalkers, people who are following him around and just invading his personal space. And I think that all that sort of gets wrapped into, well, these crazy obsessives who think about nothing but me, they're wasting their lives.
Right.
And, you know, my argument is, you know, a lot of the people that I met were, like me, just really serious music fans who at some point in our life got the bug, you know, the Dylan bug. And, you know, as one writer said, once you sign up for Dylan, you don't easily check out of the story.
And, you know, some of these Dylanologists attribute pretty big changes in their lives to their following Dylan and their obsession with Dylan. One woman becomes a public defender because, you know, she wants to, you know, help the underdog.
Right.
And then there's another woman who gets her life together, becomes a Christian because of the album Saved. And that album, which is part of that whole Christian period in Dylan's discography that many of us sort of look down our noses at, Saved comes up several times in the course of this book. Do we need to reevaluate that period and that record?
I think it's a great record. You know, I had not listened to it that closely until the morning that I went to meet that woman in Wichita. I put it on my iPod and went for a walk and listened to it very closely. And I get it. I mean, it's a great record. There's great singing on it. And, you know, for Robin, you know, I think it's not like it was a drug that she took and suddenly her life had turned around and she had cleaned everything up. She describes it almost as something that played in the background and worked on her. And she knew she had a kid and she knew she needed to clean up and get her life together. And, you know, I think she had an unconventional religious upbringing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, her and her husband became Pentecostal. Then left that, and now sort of their church is, they describe it almost as the church of Bob. You know, they if they want to go to church, they put on Saved and soak it in. And I'm all right with that.
This is the song Solid Rock from that album, Saved by Bob Dylan. Line, won't let go, I can't let go, is this woman puts it on the T-shirt that her son wears in all of his class photos, a different size T-shirt each year.
That's right. She had an opportunity to meet Dylan. She had been trying to get him to sign her copy of Saved at a number of shows. She was sitting up front and trying to get him. And at some point, she says he told her, you know, not on stage, you got to, you know, meet me out back. And she meets him while he's walking under the bus and they have a conversation. And he says, why this record? And she wanted to tell him the whole backstory, but there was not enough time. Yeah. So she just told him about her son rocking out in his diapers to saved, and he signed it and went on his way.
David Kinney's with me on Soundcheck, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of the new book, The Dylanologists. We alluded before to sometimes people leaving the Church of Bob. Andy from Britain, during the never-ending tour, is one of a growing chorus of voices who don't think the singing is great anymore. And there's a great line towards the end of the book that I want to read where he talks about a long growl to indicate that there used to be something I wanted to say here, but now this noise will suffice. Which is a killer line.
Yes. You know, in a career filled with controversy, you know, him going electric, him going Christian, him going country, now the debate is over The Voice and whether he should, you know, stop doing so many shows and take a break and save that instrument.
For what?
That's probably his question.
We've been speaking about The Dylanologists, Adventures in the Land of Bob by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David Kinney. David, great to have you with us on Soundcheck today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The pale moon rose in its glory out of the western town. She told us that.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.
Sailing into tomorrow to a golden age foretold. The night was bright with starlight. The seas were sharp and clear. Moon.